T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Peter, thanks for joining us here again on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. How are you, sir?
Everything's going okay. How about you guys?
We are doing well. That game in Baltimore was an A-plus playoff atmosphere football game. It was outstanding. It was hard-hitting. And even in defeat, I think the 49ers have proven beyond the shadow of the doubt that they are as much of a Super Bowl contender as the team that beat them.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I said at the end of the game, you know, we're sitting around, a few of us, talking about that, and I said, the Baltimore Ravens won this game, but, and there are obviously no, whatever you'd call them, moral victories or whatever, but the and it's silly because that loss could well push the 49ers to the fifth seed, so that would obviously be bad, and, you know, a total road road to the Super Bowl. But I mean, it's not impossible. The Giants have done it a couple of times, but I just would say that 49ers have absolutely nothing to be ashamed of. Should they have done something else on fourth and one, maybe in the fourth quarter? But look, you could argue and microanalyze whatever. I just think that they showed themselves to be worthy of anybody anywhere.
Was that at issue, though? I thought they'd already established that.
The way Baltimore has been playing, though, Ray, when you beat the Patriots by 17, when you beat the Seahawks on the road by whatever it was, 14, when Houston by 34, I mean, let's be honest. Who knew what was going to happen on Sunday? I certainly didn't. And although I believe that the 49ers were very good, I also believe that, you know, going into that game, the Ravens were the best team in football, and who knows what was going to happen. And I just think they're 1 and 1A as I look at it right now.
So Greg Roman, obviously the offensive coordinator of the Ravens, and I can't help but remember that the last time a quarterback was breaking records with his feet, Greg Roman was also the offensive coordinator. Do you see a lot of commonalities between the stuff he's doing with Lamar Jackson and some of what he did with Colin Kaepernick, or is this just sort of a coincidence and it's a totally new offense?
There's a lot of commonalities, and one of the biggest commonalities is that a lot of times when Lamar Jackson – you heard Richard Sherman talk about it after the game. I think the general feeling, and I'll say this first and then I'll talk about Kaepernick, but I think the general feeling around the league is that the NFL might have to do something, at least discuss whether anything should be done about the fact that defensive players are so careful now to not lay into a quarterback. But if that quarterback has the ball and you don't know whether he's going to run or pass and he's running out of the pocket and you have to be a little bit careful, is it really fair to the defense that the quarterback gets quarterback protection even though on many of those plays he runs? And that's going to be something I think that the NFL is going to have to look into in the off season. But having said that, I think there's a lot of things that are similar to Lamar Jackson and Kaepernick. The one thing that's dissimilar, I just think that Lamar Jackson is a significantly faster person. And so when he breaks through the defensive line, he's harder to catch, I think, than Kaepernick was 7 years ago.
Peter, I want to ask you about, I think, someone who might wear the hat of least appreciated linebacker, underrated, if you will, not rated. We could talk about great current NFL linebackers for an hour and probably not get Fred Warner's name out in the conversation. Maybe doing him a disservice. He is playing with more responsibility like a stud in his sophomore year than I expected him to, and it's like Quan Alexander almost didn't even get hurt. I think if Quan Alexander's in that game, they figure out a way to slow down Lamar Jackson. Fred Warner has been awesome.
Possibly. I think Lamar Jackson is like, well, for a while when they used to call Kristaps Porzingis the unicorn, a 7'5" guy or whatever he is who can shoot a three 80% as good as Steph Curry. And I'm exaggerating, but you know, I think Lamar Jackson is just different, but let's talk about Fred Warner. So last week after that game against Green Bay, I spent 15, 20 minutes with him after the game. And the one thing I found both watching him as a player and also talking to him, he's really sort of dedicated to his craft and he really wants to be great. And I think that when Robert Saleh has a guy at the nerve center of his defense, who's that willing and that you can put so much on his shoulders and he's going to respond. He's great sideline to sideline. And he's very, very smart. It sort of reminds me, I wrote about George Kittle in my column this week, and it sort of reminds me, every player has a little fingerprint to him, you know, a different little way about him, and you have to know that player. And I think when the 49ers scouted Warner at Brigham Young, I think one of the things they found is that this guy not only loved football, but he was also, you know, Phi Beta Kappa-esque at knowing the game and knowing all aspects of it, which is why there's no fear in having him, you know, get everybody in the right position. And so when you scout players and you really get to know them, I mean, I think it's a great thing, first of all, and I don't mean to cross-pollinate him and Kittle, but when you think about it, Kittle's in the fifth round, in 2017, that was the draft I covered, and I remember a lot of discussion about Kittle in that draft. In that, I thought they might have taken him in the third round, but and then you know, obviously Warner was sort of a late rising guy in the draft, and the 49ers were fortunate enough in 2018 to get him, but. Look, the fact that and let's not forget, because all of these guys are in one place at one time, because Adam Peters is a hell of a scout, and he's one of these guys who is beating the bushes with his staff to find these guys, you know, as basically the scouting guru there. John Lynch allows Peters and Shanahan a lot of leeway when deciding who they're going to pick. I think everybody who works there says he's a really good boss because he's not a dictator. And then I think having Kyle Shanahan there and knowing the kind of player that he wants at every position is very well defined. I think that makes the scout's job not necessarily easy, but it lets you know precisely what it is you want to find when you go out on the scouting trail.
I hesitate to use this verbiage, but I'll do it anyway. How much easier, if at all, will it be for the 49ers to defend the Saints? Or is it just as difficult but different?
I think it'll be different, Ray, but I think it won't be harder. It won't be easy. But I would rather play defense against the New Orleans Saints right now than against Baltimore. Now, what's interesting is that Nobody wanted to play in a driving rain when it's 38 degrees. It was total misery. Justin Tucker told me after the game, that's the first time he's ever changed his shirt at halftime of a game, you know, at any level. But he said, I was freezing and I was just soaked to the bone. So, but this is a different challenge. It's a fast track. It's against a wide receiver who basically is averaging almost 10 catches a game and like 14 or 15 targets. It's a ridiculous challenge. But the only thing, Ray, that I would say that is good right now is that Drew Brees has not been post-thumb injury as explosive as he was pre-thumb injury.
Raheem Mostert, obviously.
Wow.
Yes, that's the correct response. My question to you would be, how much of that is Raheem Mostert finally getting an opportunity to carry it 19 times in a game? How much is great offensive line, and how much is play calling?
Well, you know, I've always thought that what's so interesting about the running game that the 49ers employ, you know, and you can discuss a lot about who should get the credit, okay, for this. But I remember Kyle Shanahan was absolutely adamant when he took this job. Everybody thought, well, you just saw him have this incredible success with Matt Ryan in Atlanta, and all these receivers were, you know, were going nuts and have putting up these great numbers. And he was insisting from the very moment he took the job that he and Bobby Turner were going to have a classic, great running game. And, you know, he was not going to play just bombs away football. He was going to focus very heavily on the run. That's why you've seen them spend heavily on Jerick McKinnon, even though it hasn't worked out, and it may never work out. But that's why then they went out and spent money on Coleman. And what that has done, essentially, is it has left two backs who have Bobby Turner's imprimatur on. Because understand this. If you're going to play running back for Kyle Shanahan and Bobby Turner, no matter where you're drafted or how you're going to be picked, you know from the history of it. You look at Olandis Gary. You look at Terrell Davis. You look at all of these running backs who went through Denver, with the exception of Clinton Portis, who obviously was a high pick. But all of these guys basically are one-cut, get-up-the-field backs. Don't take a lot of time looking for your hole. Just bang it in there. And so Matt Breida breaks the mold slightly because he's a little bit more of a darter. But Mostert is the perfect back. And just think, at the beginning of this year, Raheem Mostert, with any realistic look at it, was number four on the depth chart, you know, behind McKinnon, Coleman, and Breida. And you know, now you look at it, and I would ask this simple question. Are you taking Mostert out of the lineup for anybody now? And again, that's not how they look at it. They'll use all of their guys, and they're not just going to use one. But Mostert was, I don't know if you guys saw it, it was hilarious. You know, Chris Berman is reprising his role with Tom Jackson on the highlights now on ESPN+. Plus. And last night at halftime, they ran a three-minute portion of the highlights, and the highlight with Mostert, you know, you see Mostert runs that long run down the right side, and he says it's Colonel Mostert in the conservatory with the whatever, with the limping leg or whatever it was, but it was a reference to the Clue thing, and I just thought it was hilarious. And Raheem Mostert deserves all of the attention, all the credit he got after that game, because you know what? Even when the weather's crappy, you ought to be able to have a good running game. And that's really what Kyle Shanahan realized the other day.
Raheem Mostert joins us in 12 minutes from right now, top of the hour here on 95.7 The Game. Right,
Chris Berman is giving him a fun nickname. You'll love that.
Absolutely.
Colonel Mostert.
Who doesn't like a good Berman nickname? Still, Bert B. Home Blylevin is still, is still something that's special. Peter King, 95.7 The Game, NFL Insider, NBC Sports. Last night's Monday Night Football game was a big one. Seattle came out on top, and you know, today the 49ers are looking at a win total that you'd think starting 9-1 wouldn't have to have them playing with their hair on fire in the entire month of December. But indeed, that's going to be the way it's going to go down. Peter, the Hawks, meanwhile, Seattle is only plus 35-point differential, the worst in the history of a 10-win football team. I respect 10 wins. I also respect what information we're supposed to glean from point differential. So how am I to interpret who the Seahawks really are? Because, man, they look good. But a plus 35-point differential isn't very impressive at all.
I mean, you watch them every week, and every week the game is competitive. They don't blow teams out. And they've gotten beaten when they got beat by Baltimore, that was at home, and that was a beating. The one thing I would say that really interests me about the Seahawks is that they're right now they're the NFL's only unbeaten team on the road, and they're 6-0, and four of those wins have come in Eastern time. They got one more left against Carolina in a couple of weeks, but it says to me, I'm so impressed, regardless of what the stats say, how pretty or ugly it was. It's just, I want Russell Wilson on my team. You know, I want him with the ball in his hands, behind by a touchdown with 5 minutes to go. I think we're going to win. And that's sort of, you know, I don't know how to say it other than I don't think they're a great team, but I think they're a very good team with a quarterback who is as good, or who I would say is the best in the NFL right now at playing football in the fourth quarter.
What happened in Carolina today? Why did it happen? And is this going to be a coaching job that David Tepper will hire a defensive guy for, or is he going to go the way owners usually do and get the pretty offensive name?
Ray, that's a great question. I think first of all, when the question is asked why, and again, I like Ron Rivera, and I think he is a very good coach. But in the NFL right now, if you go 29 and 35 over 4 years with zero playoff wins, with the majority of that time you're playing with an MVP quarterback, there's going to be some heat on you. And that heat came down. I think that Tepper thought about doing this a year ago, and it would have been a bad mistake a year ago. And he's been watching them play. And a lot of people will say, well, what do you expect? They're playing Kyle Allen at quarterback. I mean, I don't care. Duck Hodges is 3-0 for the Pittsburgh Steelers with no running backs and no wide receivers. So settle down by saying that, oh, my God, how can you win without your starting quarterback? A lot of teams are doing it and doing it very well this year by chance. But what happened is that this is an owner that is not going to sit idly by. It's an owner who made this change today because he wants to get a head start on finding a new coach. And he wants to start talking to the best guys in college. I will not be surprised if he has some sort of secret little meeting with a couple of guys in college football, maybe Lincoln Riley. You know, I don't know. But there's that, and just my gut feeling, Ray, although I don't think anybody knows anything right now, he sees what the best teams in football have. They have explosive offenses with very good quarterbacks. And right now I think that's, if I were to guess, that is the direction I believe he's leaning. I think he'll go out and try to get a really good offensive mind whether as a coordinator right now or on the level of college football. The one thing, you know, last week when I made a few calls about coaches, you know what I heard that was interesting? That that even though the Arizona Cardinals are not playing great, they're playing pretty well, and they're more competitive than anybody thought they would be. And I think that this is going to lead a lot of owners and GMs to beat the bushes and to see if there's another Kingsbury type who can adjust to pro-life very quickly. I do expect, by the way, even though he's not an offensive guy, I do expect Baylor coach Matt Rhule to get serious consideration and very likely a job offer somewhere. I don't know if he'll take it, but he was in the final two for the Jets last year, and I had heard that if he was more aggressive about really wanting the job, that he could have it. So anyway, we'll see what happens.
Peter, you just said very aggressive, and I got a question about Derek Carr, who people say were not aggressive enough, overly aggressive in the wrong moments. It was a bad showing in Kansas City to the point where it might have undone goodwill that he had built up with John Gruden. Is Derek Carr using the end of this season to audition to be the opener in Vegas?
I believe so. I think John Gruden is not going to – John Gruden is always going to be looking over the horizon at the next quarterback. He always did that when he was in Tampa. He never really had a quarterback in Tampa who he felt comfortable with. He was always looking. Why did he spend the time that he spent this year, investigating Kyler Murray, working out Kyler Murray, going on the field in the Kyler Murray workout in Dallas, just so that he could see everything about Kyler Murray? You just can't tell me that if he was madly in love with his quarterback that he'd be looking into Kyler Murray like that. So, I like Derek Carr. Everybody likes Derek Carr. I think he's a good to very good NFL quarterback. But he's also in the situation where he's got a coach who he has to know is not going to be particularly loyal till the end of time to his quarterback. And do I think that John Gruden will think about other quarterbacks unless Carr knocks his socks off the last 4 weeks of the season? Yes, I do.
Peter, thank you very much. Always a pleasure to talk with you. With Raheem Mostert ready to go, we're going to say thank you very much for joining us today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.